Well, turn with me, first of all, tonight to 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 24. I'll look at several words because I'm going to be talking tonight about, the title will be The Examined Life. Interestingly, as we look into the scriptures and mature, we realize one thing, at least it comes to mind, that one thing that's gone on is our life is being constantly examined. That's what's taking place. But in order to understand that more thoroughly, we need to look at some things, what the Bible says about examining. Because words can be synonymous when you look at the word judge or examine and discern. Those words can sometimes be very synonymous in the way that they're used in their meaning, in the way that they are maybe tweaked a little bit in various meanings. But one you have in 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 24, speaking about prophecy in the context, he says, but if all prophesy and there come in one that believeth not, one unlearned, he is convinced of all, he is judged of all. And the word judged there would be the Greek word anakrino. It's a compound word, A-N-A-K-R-I-N-O. And that word means to examine or to judge. It can mean to investigate, to inquire, to scrutinize, to sift, even question. And again, it's used in Acts chapter 17 and verse 11. Acts 17, verse 11. And here it's talking about the Bereans who went home, and what did they do with the scriptures as they had heard them? It says that they searched the scriptures. That word search is, again, interestingly, the same as the word judge in 1 Corinthians 14, which anakrino, to investigate, to sift, to inquire into, to scrutinize. And it could mean to, in the questioning, it mean you question something in order to pass a judicial sentence. And that's the reason you question things or scrutinize things or search out things, because you want to come to some conclusion to make a decision on. It can mean to determine the excellence or the fault or defect of any person or thing. So as you look at something, I mean, as you shop, you look at things, and you might see you're looking at furniture, you might see a defect, scratches in it, cracks in it. Well, you search through, you look it over, you sift through. If you're like my wife, you do. She's very thorough. She's really good at doing that. I mean, she could be back at the front of the store and the furniture would be in the back of the store. She says, that's got a scratch on it. That's an eagle eye does that kind of thing, because you see things. She scrutinizes it real well. We'd be riding down the road and she reached over and says, you got an eyebrow hair right there. She starts jerking it while I'm driving down the road. And we're swerving all over the road. And I'm thinking, that's not the time. Your timing chain is off. But anyways, that's the concept behind the word, to determine something about the thing that you're sifting through and searching. If you search the scriptures, you come to some sort of conclusion, or you pass a sentence. Yeah, this is right, this is wrong. That's what happens when you begin to do an examination of something or judge something. This is used also over in Acts chapter 28. If we go back into the book of Acts, Acts chapter 28, and Paul's speaking here, and he starts talking in verse 16. And he says, and when we came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard. But Paul was permitted to dwell by himself with a soldier that kept him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, Paul called the chief of the Jews together. And when they were come together, he said unto them, men and brethren, though I have committed nothing against the people or custom of our fathers, yet was I delivered, I was delivered prisoner from Jerusalem to the hands of the Romans, who, when they had examined me, so they examined Paul. They scrutinized, they asked him questions, they sifted through all of the situation and circumstances, came to some judicial decision. They determined something about him. And he says, when they examined me, they would have let me go because there was no cause of death in me, or there was no crime worthy of death, you could say. So they could find no fault there after they had. It's like a standing before a judge, and you evidence is barred. You investigate, you scrutinize, you question, you look at, you find out where somebody stands on something and where they are. And so that's basically the meaning of this word. The first word we look at is anakrino, which is translated as we see, examine, it's judge or search. And that's basically what it means as far as that word's concerned. Now, another word, as we look at that, is one we're very familiar with, is over in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 28. And all of this is just kind of introducing what I want to talk about, the examined life, because these words go together. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, in reference to the communion table, beginning in verse 28, he says, "But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he eateth and drinketh unworthily, eateth and drinketh damnation," or he brings a sentence on himself because he doesn't discern the Lord's body. And so that word examine there is a Greek word, dokimazo. And that's a synonym to the word anakrino in a sense that it talks about to test and to prove something out. Examine it, check it out, look it out. See what worth it is, see what value it is. Same concept is used right there. And then another word would be, we're familiar with, is the word parazio, which has to do with tests and temptations, which means to test, to examine, to search out. And then in this context, another word right here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is in verse 31, "For if we would judge ourselves," that word is diakrino, not anakrino, but diakrino. And this word here simply means to discriminate. You separate thoroughly through things in order to make a distinction about something. And that's what we're supposed to do when it comes to judging things. "For if we would judge ourselves," look at yourself, ask yourself some honest questions, deeply thoughtful questions to cause, you know, yourself to see where you stand as far as you're being ready to take of the communion and do it worthily, so that you don't be doing it with bringing God's divine displeasure upon you. And then it goes on, "But when we are judged," now this word judged is in the past tense means krino, which means we are judged or a sentence is passed. And why is a sentence passed? Is because we didn't judge ourselves. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord. Because we didn't judge ourselves, then God will have to. And so we need to judge ourselves and come to an honest, you know, judicial sentence on our own life. You need to deal with something before you take this. So it's called examination. And all that comes back to the fact that when you look at examination, you're talking about the fact judging yourself or all the things that go on in life that is examining you. And over the Old Testament, in Psalms chapter 26 and verse 2, you find here that David makes this statement, "Examine me, O Lord, and prove me, try my reins and my heart. For thy loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in thy truth. I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. I've hated the congregation of the evildoers and will not sit with the wicked." So here he's saying, he's examined me, O Lord. He's crying out to the Lord, "Examine me, prove me, try me deeply into my reins, into my heart. See if there's anything there." Far as I know, I haven't sat around the wicked and buddied up to them. I haven't been sitting with those who are, you know, just evil workers and the people that I shouldn't be around, as far as I can see. But you judge me, Lord, and what you come up with. See what you come up with. So you ask God to examine him here. Try me, prove me, investigate me. When you look at that, you think, how often do you realize that your life is going through some sort of examination? It's always going on, because when you look at the fact, we have a right to judge things. I mean, it can be taken wrong. People can get critical, and they misjudge, and they, you know, don't judge on a righteous basis and getting the facts. They just do it on feeling or, you know, emotion, and not based upon the truth as they're supposed to, and they come up with wrong conclusions, wrong decisions, and a critical opinion of things that they should not have. And so, in a practical way, we look a lot of times at another word that's similar in our language we probably understand more, which is the word appraisal. If we want an appraisal of something, we usually, for property, you hire an appraiser. What does an appraiser do? He comes out and he looks, he investigates, he scrutinizes, he sifts through everything. He asks a lot of questions. He measures a lot of things as far as your house, looks at how much acreage you've got, looks at the condition of the house and all the amenities that may be there, in order that he might come up with a fair and just evaluation of something, that he can determine by his looking at those things the excellence or the defects, in order to say, this is my sentence I give upon the value of this property. And so an appraiser is something we understand. I mean, we look at people who appraise jewelry. You have jewelry, maybe. You take it to the store and you ask the man to appraise it. What is it worth? What is the value of it? Or you have a coin collection. You take it to a coin collector, and he can look at it, and he can eyeball it, and he can look at the condition, tell you whether it's it's been in circulation, how long it's been in circulation, whether it's good, whether it's fair, whether it's fine, extra fine, uncirculated, and so on, things like that. And from that, he gives an appraisal of this coin is worth this amount of money. I was talking to somebody about that this morning. You know, I used to collect coins a lot, and I had a little machine that you could put the coins in and go through, and it was magnified, and a light was there, and you could look at them. I had a book, and one book was the value of the coin as far as, you know, what you thought it was worth. Another book was like with cars, which you could sell it for. Not very often you get the sale price, but that's just the way it's set up. Same thing as you have in the car industry. They have their little black book, is which they you go tell them, show them your car. They look at that black book. They get one every month, and they see the value of that car and all the different little things that might be upon it. And then they say, well, we'll give you this for it. It's called an appraisal. It happens a lot. And this goes on and on in this world where you look, you've got antiques. You do all that in order to determine its value, to examine it, to see what it's worth. Now, we understand that. But at the same time, this word, we look at examine from these words I've spoken about that we're very familiar with for the most part, have to do with looking at something in order to search it out, sift through it, inquire, ask questions, and come up with a conclusion. What is the value? What is the value of your faith? What value are you as far as you being a Christian and your relationship with the Lord? Because that's what it's all about. How many ways are we examined? How well are we being appraised? Now, does God allow that to happen in our lives? Absolutely. It takes place often. So it would be foolish to believe that we could escape any examination whatsoever. Nobody would never recognize something that might be deficient in our faith or something that is a fault or a weakness in our life, because God wants to bring those things out in our life. It's not as if God has to find out something that he doesn't know. God already knows it. He wants you to see it in order that you would judge yourself and do something about it. So we call this the examined life, because at the end of the life being examined, like Paul said, they found no cause within me worthy of death. They found no fault in me. And that's what we really want it to be like in our own lives, we would think. If you went to court and accused of something, you would come out, well, we find no fault here. I mean, because your life is under examination. Sometimes it's really under examination. I mean, it's like the magnifying glass is right on you, observing your character, every aspect of your walk and your lifestyle and so on and so forth. But God allows us to be examined in order to prove us worthy, to prove us, I mean, to come to a final sentence in our life, because that's the concept, to come to pass a judicial sentence. This is one of mine. This person is qualified. He's not, because the word adokamos, which means disqualified. I mean, unworthy, untried, of no value. You ever thought about somebody that, you know, that person is worthless? Well, certainly there's people like that you see and recognize as far as the criminal world is concerned. But how many different ways and means does God allow to examine us? Because it's happening all the time. And I think that sometimes we're not aware of that fact that our life is under the magnifying glass. And God is allowing these things to happen in our lives, and I think it's something we need to be aware of and to take a look at our own lives. And like David, best I know, I'm doing okay, but judge me, O Lord, examine me, search me out, try my reins, try into the very depths and the recesses of the motivations and intents of my heart and see what you bring up to the surface, because it doesn't take much sometimes to, you know, using the word named questioning, to ask questions, to inquire, because that's what you do in a courtroom. And that's what you do a lot of times when you're talking to people. You may ask them questions. Questions can be revealing by the answers. They reveal a whole lot of things, but just depending on the answer that you get. And so that's what we're talking about here. But one way that this happens is, you know, that God allows Satan to go about. You read the book of Job and you see right away that God called to Satan's attention Job. And he allowed him to scrutinize and to examine and to look into Job's life. God allowed that to happen. Now, we know that goes on, because all through the Bible, but Luke 22, when Jesus said, you know, that the devil has asked you by the obtaining that he might be able to sift you. But I pray for you that your faith fail not. So you realize that there's an enemy that's going around seeking whom he may devour. That's still in 1 Peter 5:8. Whom we're to resist steadfast in the faith. And so we have an enemy that's against us. He's Satan. He's the devil. He's a liar. He's a thief. He's a murderer. He destroys people's lives. And he's roaming about seeking whom he may get his hands upon in order that he might be able to just, you know, snatch him out of the hands of God. So the devil examines our faith often. He'll question our faith. He'll question our motives. He'll question a lot about our lives. And he'll attack our minds. He'll attack us in so many different ways. He'll attack us through people. He'll attack us through circumstances, through sometimes we would say persecution. I mean, the devil can use persecution to come against us by causing people to have a bad attitude towards the Christian faith. And the devil will stir that up. I mean, he'll do anything to get a mob to attack Christians. You see that happening today with the homosexual community getting themselves all riled up and, you know, going into churches and invading them and shutting them down. That's the devil that does those kind of things. And a lot of that brings out about who those Christians really are, where they stand about things. And I mean, will they get violent? How will they handle the situation? What will they do? I mean, all through the book of Acts, you see the Christianity under a microscope. All the world around it, just simply constantly, there's a judgment taking place and people are scrutinizing and talking about, and even in the Sanhedrin and in all of the judges and judicial systems and everything, Paul and the apostles and everybody was going through some kind of examination in their life. And the same thing is true for us. But we know, secondly, that God is sovereign. God is sovereign. God is sovereign over everything. There's nothing that God does not know. And he allows these things to take place. 1 Corinthians 10:13, but he will not allow us to go through more than we're able. But he allows them to happen in order for us to, again, to see what's inside of. We know that the test is about testing and ascertaining our worth or our value. To see if our faith is real, to see if it's genuine, or to see if it is something that is just a lot of talk and chatter, but there's really nothing there whatsoever. And that ends up being proven for a whole lot of people. That's why we speak about Christians a lot of times. We say professing Christians, because they profess it, but do they really possess it is what the meaning is behind that. Because if you possess it, it shows in the way that you live, the way you act, the way you respond. And that's just an examination of your life. Because if you revile back, and if you act back the way the world does, then your examination is coming out that there's a defect there, that there's something deficient in your faith and in your attitude and your relationship with God. You look at Daniel in the lion's den. You look at the three Hebrew children when you read through that accounts in the Old Testament, in the book of Daniel, and you see these people, they were under the microscope of the government of the time. Everybody was against these people, trying to basically brainwash them, change their names, put them into another educational system, teach them everything that as far as the, you know, the humanistic government wants them to believe, trying to take away from them their foundation of faith in God. But yet they stood their ground and held on. They went through quite an examination that not many people go through the depth of. And even, you know, when you look at the three Hebrew children standing there saying, well, we will not bow to this golden image. And you know the outcome of that. So we know that the end of that, I mean, they were tried by fire. And that's what you do when you want to find out what gold is really worth. You put it under that, you know, you melt it down and you find out the real substance of it. You know, we have today, you know, people talk about silver and gold. Well, you have clad coins that might have silver in it, but it doesn't have pure silver. And so when you melt it down, you get all of the, you know, the copper and the other metals out of it, and then the silver that separates out of that. And sometimes some of your old Morgan dollars only have 70 to 80% silver in them. They don't have all silver in them. And so the coin might be valued because of its age, but it's not valued very much because of its silver. Once it's melted down and gone through that appraisal that the fire brings out and causes it to be separated, what is really the metal of your faith. And so it is with these three Hebrew children. When they went through that fire, they came out at the end of that thing. They found that they were worthy. They were worthy of who they were. And it changed, you know, changed old Nebuchadnezzar around, turned his heart around, and which was good. But we see this going on all the time. Well, you take the community you live in. Another thing, thirdly, just the community. Do you realize that you live in the community that you live in, that people look at your life, that they evaluate you? You do it to other people. When somebody approaches you, if somebody comes up and knocks on your door and you've never seen them before, you evaluate them. Don't you? You look at the way they're dressed. I mean, let's say they come up with a gun in their hand and, a cigar in their mouth and old greasy hair and a hood over their head. And they come up, you evaluate them. That might be a little intimidating, wouldn't it? But then they come up with a nice, well-dressed suit on, but they're carrying a watchtower. It might look nice, but they still, there's something not right. Yeah, so you evaluate those kind of things. So don't say you don't. And people talk about judge not unless you be judged, but yet we do it all the time. And we do it in fairness because we're distinguishing right from wrong, good from evil. I mean, if you're going to take a shortcut through to the store, you're not going to necessarily at midnight go down the back alley. You're going to go down the lighted street. That's making a discrimination. But you're doing it because it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Well, this goes on all the time. And so the community, how do they appraise our lives as Christians? Because they know, your community, we're talking about everything as far as the community is concerned, whether it's the post office, the grocery store, the bank, the people you live next door to, your neighbors, everybody knows something about your life to some degree. They don't know everything, but they observe. They watch everything that you do when they can see. I mean, when they're around. I'm not saying they're out there in the woods spying on you. I'm saying that they know what's going on. They know you're a professing Christian, but do they believe that you're real? Are you genuine? Because so many people have seen so much it's false. But that's all it is out there. Mostly it's false. And that's why they think everything is so bad. They've never seen the real. But once when you've seen so much false and then you see the real, it's like your eyes have just, been opened up. Well, this is a whole lot different than everything I've heard or seen. Well, because it's something that's more genuine. It's more closer to the real thing. I mean, this is not half silver and copper. This is all silver. This is pretty pure. Like the word is pure. And so people, it's like paying your bills on time. Your bill collects. I mean, if I was going to investigate your life, let's say, for something. Say you came in, you put an application into an employment place, you put an application in. A good employer is going to look at your life and scrutinize, you give references. Probably some credit references, probably previous jobs references, probably, personal contact references. Do you not? I've had a lot of people come to me over the years saying, I use you as a reference. So you sure you want to do that? But you do that, and people will call you and ask you questions about that person. And they might call your landlord. Well, does this person take care of the property? Do they drink? Do they party? I mean, what are they like? You don't know the question they might ask. Do they pay their bills? Do they pay their rent on time? Things like that. And so, I mean, that's the question that happens. I mean, you can go into a local restaurant, and you go enough and people begin to recognize you. Not, maybe they don't know you by name, maybe they do. But how you behave in that restaurant. It's good to have a good time, but people can be loud, boisterous, spill drinks and holler and scream and everything. I mean, and that's not a very good testimony, is it? I'm not saying you can't enjoy yourself, can't have a good time, but those things do go on. So the way you act, how many times have you been in a restaurant and some of you with five or six children and everything's in order and somebody comes up to you and says, I saw you pray over your meal and you look like your children are in order. I mean, they compliment you for that. Well, they were probably sitting over there and just watched. They probably watched you bow your head and watched you pray. They were judging you. They were examining and scrutinizing your life and your behavior and what you did, watching how your kids, and they were thinking, this is something that is genuine, more real than anything I've seen, because everywhere I've been, they're crying, hollering, and throwing food. But so I see something different. So it draws their attention. It should, because they saw you pray. Once you pray, the microscope comes out. It comes out right away and says, do you see they prayed over their meal? Then they start listening. Maybe they overhear you cursing. Maybe they overhear you telling dirty jokes. Then they just sit there. Would you sit there and just shake your head? I would. Think, that's pathetic. That's not a good testimony. Or they're loud and misbehave. They throw food at each other and do all kinds of foolish and stupid things. And people wear that. I mean, that microscope is, boy, it's turning down, getting real close on you and saying, these people, something wrong with them. They don't understand what real Christianity is about. So, I mean, and even the tip that you leave is, if you work at a store that where you receive tips, as a head is nodding so much right now about, if you work there and they don't tip well, you know right away. And some people just don't tip. They don't give anything. It's bare minimum. But Christian ought to tip. Boy, it's quiet on that. So you can't afford to. You don't go eat. Stay home. Make a peanut butter sandwich or whatever. But, I mean, and then the people who complain. I mean, it's like, and here, In this setting in a church, we're close. I mean, it's not such a large church that we can't get to know each other and we don't know about each things that go on. So if you get somebody in the church that's a mouth, understand what I'm talking? Complainer, criticizes, nothing ever goes right. And we've had a few of those over the years. Now, I'm talking about a long time. Had a lot of them around, just come in and out. All they do is complain in and out and backwards and forth. I mean, it can't even rain right. The snowdrops are not big enough or small enough. It's too cold. It's too hot. The temperature's not just right. There's always something they complain about. They just cannot be satisfied or content. I don't really want to pastor people like that because they don't want to do anything about it. All they want to do is complain all their life. Well, see, you say, well, that's you're judging them. Well, certainly I'm judging them because they are representing Christ, number one, and number two, they're representing this church. And then when somebody sees them act that way, a lot of times this is what happens, and it shouldn't, but when somebody sees one bad apple, they judge all the other apples in the cart by that one. And I don't want that. I want when people judge as one, they can say, well, those people are pretty good people over there. They know you're not perfect. That's fine. But the point of it is it's about being examined. I mean, if you just ask people about you, I mean, what would the grocery say, a grocery clerk say, or what would somebody say if you investigate it? I mean, what would the bank say when they know you come to the bank regularly and you make deposits, you talk to the people? I mean, bank I go to, they know you by name now. You've been around long enough. They know you. But what do they say about you? He's an old grump. He's a slob. He's a what? I mean, just saying, they might say things about you. You think, well, Wouldn't that make you stop and be convicted about that? I mean, standing in lines a long time. I mean, you know, the murmurings come out and the complainings come out. I might get hurt on that one. But even like in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Verse 7, for yourselves know how we ought to how you ought to follow us, for we behave not ourselves disorderly among you. Disorderly. In other words, there must be an orderly way to behave and a disorderly way. And I think that's the way you would look at that. And so how do you behave? I mean, wherever it's at. I mean, on the job. When everybody has a job, people know you, you talk to each other. But do you criticize, complain, murmur? Are you late all the time? I mean, do they have a little coffee corner they put there that's an honor system where you say everybody gets a cup of coffee, put 50 cents in, but you don't put any money in it? Now, Christian, if it's an honor system, it's 50 cents, you get a cup of coffee, you ought to put 50 cents in. You can't walk into a Sheets or Starbucks and say, give me a cup of coffee, and say, I'll see you later. They call the police on you because you're supposed to pay for those things. But there's an honor system, and a Christian, all people are supposed to be honorable. And so you put your 50 cent in there. Well, I work here. They are to supply me coffee. See, that's the attitude. That kind of attitude needs to be severely dealt with because somebody owes me something. It's selfish. It's cantankerous. It's just always got a problem. You can't be satisfied with anything. So, I mean, all that comes down to the point. I mean, when you work, do you do an honest day's labor for the wages you make? Or do you sit around, talk on the phone, use the internet? Do you make long-distance calls and let them pay for them so you don't have to be on your bill? I mean, these are attitudes that can come out. Do you take some of the supplies home from the supply department? Do you take their pencils and pens and papers and paper clips? I mean, do you do those things? That's dishonest. They don't belong to you. Now, if you ask and they said, yeah, that's one thing, but when you just take it assuming something, it's not right whatsoever. It doesn't belong to you. You were hired to do a job, and you were given the instruments to do the job in, but those things belong to that company. They do not belong to you. And so how would they look at your life? People, I mean, you say, well, nobody's watching me. Ha ha, you're deceived. You're being observed. People watch you. I'm not saying that they got some kind of little spy mirror up there and a little voice thing down there somewhere where they can hear everything you say and watch everything that you do, but they observe. They're very observant about those things. So what kind of reference would your employer give about you, your past employer, your past friends and people that you were, if somebody were investigating your life, what would you find out about your life? Because it's being examined. And that's what we need to ask ourselves. How does our life look in the eyes of God? How does God see us? Because God sees us. And sometimes people see us in a light that is not very good. And that is something that ought to be dealt with in our lives, because it's certainly not what God wants us. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 10, you ask yourself, I mean, what about people that you live around? You call them neighbors. 1 John 3 and verse 10. In this, the children of God are revealed. So you can say, okay, that something comes out that reveals who they really are. And the children of the devil, whosoever doth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that as you heard from the beginning, that you should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew him? Because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. Marvel not, my brethren, that the world hates you. But just looking at that and thinking, I mean, what about, you know, people see you, they watch the way you treat your own family. Brothers and sisters fighting, hitting on each other, cursing each other out, the way you drive in the community that you live in. Do you drive fast, squealing wheels, and trying to be, you know, whatever it is, cool, whatever they call it today? Because that's a bad testimony. When you're in a car, you get a bunch of boys, a bunch of teenagers together going down a road in a car, and they start goofing off, acting stupid, and do dumb things. And so maybe they're just going down a road and they decide, you know, they're drinking, you know, root beer. I hope it is just root beer too, and not the other kind of beer. But they just, you know, they throw the bottle out the car or throw the can out the car. And sometimes people do that and then they hit somebody else. I mean, it's foolishness. It's not a very good testimony. Or maybe you just, you know, you get in a fight out here in this parking lot, two teenagers in the church over something. That's pathetic. Why would something like that take place? Unless something is being examined in your life to say, you know what, you have a serious problem. But we look at that and say, well, kids will be kids. Sure, they will be. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. But you know what? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So things begin to come out, and it's revealing of who you really are. Your life is being examined. I mean, this is your life. This is who you are. So what's going to happen when you get a little older? How are you going to act? Is this going to be corrected now? Are you going to judge yourself so that you won't come under God's divine displeasure and he have to chasten you in some other way? Will you correct yourself, or will God have to do it? That's the question that comes out for all of us. Because our life is being examined in so many different ways. Would you say that you're a nosy person, that you meddle in other people's business, that you're a busybody? Other people's business and matters is not your business. It really isn't. Now, there's things that may go on that you hear about that are not good, so you get the facts and check them out, because Paul says, I've heard these things among you. And so if somebody is committing some kind of evil in the church, it should be reported. It should not be put under the carpet. It should be dealt with, because God looks down at the churches in Revelation chapter 2 and 3, and he says something to all of those churches about their life, about their character, about who they are and what he expects of them and the kind of fruit he's looking for in their lives. And so everything we do, the way you act and behave, the way you drive, all of this is something that is recognized, and it is under the scrutiny of other people. You're being watched. I'm not talking about big government. That's going on too, but it's something else. This is bigger than big government, because God is watching you, and he knows everything that's going on, everything in your life. And sometimes he allows these things to happen in order to put a check on your life, kind of like a checkmate. Ah, gotcha. Now, what are you going to do about it? I mean, even your driving habits. If your driving habits are real bad, you always speeding, always, you know, doing the California stop sign, which means you don't stop. You just roll up to it, look and go. And you're just simply trying to get by as fast as you can without really paying attention. And you're just going to get in trouble if you don't keep doing that. It's not a good testimony. Would you say that you are a good Christian, that you're kind, you're courteous? Are you rude? I mean, those are questions, yeah. Examine yourself. Because God certainly is allowing it to happen in your life. You know, the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10:25. I mean, he asked the question when the whole thing started, who is my neighbor? Because he wanted to justify himself. He really didn't want to be bothered. And the Lord told the story. And we found out that these religious people, they just bypassed this poor little person on the road that's been robbed. But there's one man called the Good Samaritan. Samaritans were hated by the Jews. But this man stopped and held the man, helped the man, took him to an inn, had him taken care of, and left something there for him even to be taken care of further. They said, who's my neighbor? The person in need at the time. Out in places like Wyoming, they have Good Samaritan laws because when snowstorms come out there, it can be real bad. I mean, they got these big gates on the turnpikes. They shut those gates shut down. You can't get on the turnpike because snow drifts can get up real high. People can get isolated. They carry blankets and water. They carry emergency stuff in the wintertime because if they do get isolated like that, they have to survive until they can be found. And if you come up on somebody like that, you're supposed to stop and help them. Called the Good Samaritan law out there. It is a principle that the one who's in need is the one that we're supposed to help. That's who your neighbor is. But you are being watched. And a lot of times we find out that we're very selfish, indifferent, calloused people, and that's not really something that is an attribute of the Christian life, is it? It's something that's quite the opposite of the Christian life. In 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter says here that, you know, we're supposed to live the Christian life before all men. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. And following. 1 Peter 2 verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts that which war against the soul. Having your conversation or your behavior, lifestyle, honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. Submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. But for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the kings as supreme or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God that with well doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. Shutting up the fool's mouth. How? By living a life that is something that is honorable. Doing everything that you know that is right to do. I mean, the ordinances we have as far as, you know, having a fire or dogs and licenses and all those things, they're annoying ordinances, but nonetheless they are. They're not something that really keep you from your relationship with God. If somebody says, well, I don't need to have a dog tag because it really just, you know, it really hinders my relationship with God to be able to buy a dog tag. Well, that's stupid. It does not. They're not telling you you can't pray, you can't attend church. They're just simply saying, we want to be able to know this dog has had rabies shots. He's been registered because it's for the protection of other people around you. When you have a community of people, you have to do something like that in order to keep certain things in check. Because if you don't, everybody's running around, dogs and cats, and they just, you know, it's a lot of a nuisance. It'd be a whole lot of nuisance in society. And believe me, there's some dogs I would name nuisance. Nuisance one, nuisance two, nuisance three. I really would. But they're there. But Peter says, live the Christian life before all men. 1 Peter 4 and verse 4. He says here, wherein they think, speaking of your friends, people that know you, wherein they think it strange you do not run with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. And so, I mean, people, old friends, know if you've changed, don't they? They know exactly what you are. Because it don't take long when they start talking to you and say, well, come on, let's have a beer. I don't drink no more. You got a cigarette? No, I don't smoke no more. Well, do you do anything anymore? Yeah, I go to church. I do a whole lot of things different than what I used to do. If you want to get a root beer, I'll be glad to get a root beer with you, but I'm not going to do that other. And so they know that you're changed, whether or not. Did you fall into that little temptation of trying to make them think, well, I'm not so bad. I'm going to be like you. Yeah, I don't have a cigarette. Let's go buy a pack. Well, let's go get a beer. Talk old times. I'm not interested. Not interested whatsoever. Because when you start doing those kind of things, it exposes your values. It exposes your worth. It appraises you. And it comes out that you're not so good. You're not of a higher of value. I mean, the ascertaining of your wealth of that particular coin, you being the coin, would be of low value. Because you're too circulated in this world, and you've been tampered with too much, and you're dirty, you're unclean, and you're supposed to come out of darkness into light. And so, you know, you realize that people know if you are greedy, they know if you're reliable, they know things about your life, don't they? Just be around them a little while, it doesn't take long. They know if you tell a lie, they know if you'll listen to a dirty joke. They know those things. Because you know what? You don't make a stand when they start talking. And so a lot of times they catch you in being something you're not. So do you take advantage of your friends? Well, that could be a hard one for all of us. You know, friends are there to help one another. But do you take advantage of them? Always using them for your advantage. Never doing anything back, but boy, when you need some help, you turn to them. Well, you know what? You're using them. And you should never use a friend. Never use a friend. Not in the wrong way. I'm not saying you can't call a friend and ask them to help you. But when you start using people and taking advantage of them because it's advantageous to you, then you're really revealing something about you. You're always borrowing things that they have. You don't return them. When you do, you return them all beat up and worn out. That ain't right. You borrow something from somebody, you return it to them in the same condition in which you borrowed it. So that means it's incumbent upon you to know the condition it was when you borrowed it. Isn't it? Amen. Otherwise, go rent it. Because when you rent it, they may put $2 on there for insurance. So if you break it, they will cover it. You'd be better off doing that, and you would be borrowing from rent and have to repay the whole thing. Friends can be forgiven, but you're not supposed to use them. So you look at all those things and think, how much is being exposed? How much is coming out about our lives as we're showing? We're so unreliable. We're so carnal. We're indifferent. We're unkind. We're selfish. Just all of the things. There's too many defects and weaknesses being brought to the surface in our lives. It's not very good. And so therefore, our life is being examined in a way that we never thought. Because you never know what's going to happen. So you look at the church. Just being in a group. This is a church, an assembly of people gathered together for the purpose of keeping the ordinances and worshiping God, glorifying Him, teaching instruction, and all the things that we do. That's what a church does. And you know what? In that context, there are things that come out when you start fellowshipping with people and you start doing things together. And I mean, you find it like in Acts chapter 5 when somebody like Ananias and Sapphira try to come in on, you know, well, here we are, hypocrites. They expose themselves. And they expose themselves, certainly to God's divine displeasure. He judged them for their lying and their hypocrisy. Did he not? So their life was examined right there at the very moment that everything was going on in their lives. And so that's telling me something and you something that is very important as far as life is concerned. Or you look at your family. You know who knows you better than anybody else? Your family. Your mate. Your children and your parents, everybody that's, you know, grandparents, the whole clan, let's say the clan, the whole clan knows about you. They know, you know, your weaknesses, your faults. They know your problems. They know the things, you know, they know things about you. And they know if you're struggling, if you're trying, if you're really trying to put forth some effort, or if you're just really complaining and you're really lazy and you really don't even put yourself into what you're doing. They know that. So you watch those things. So I can tell you about my wife. I can tell you about my children. I can tell you their good points, their bad points, their weaknesses, and they can tell you about mine because they know more about it than you do, and they can know those things. So God knows all of us. You know, in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1, it talks about, you know, we read this occasionally around here, just keep all you women straight. Say that to make all of the feminists upset. 1 Peter 3, verse 1, likewise, you wives, be in submission to your own husbands, that if they obey not the word, they also may be won, maybe without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives. Now, what does that mean? How do you win your husband that, you know, he ain't into what you're into? You beat him over the head? Or conversation means chatter? You'll talk him right out that door. You keep talking too much. Believe me. No, conversation means your godly lifestyle. The way that you live. While they behold your chaste lifestyle coupled with respect, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of the you know, the fixing up of the hair, the wearing of gold, putting on of the apparel, all this outward appearance. But let it be what? The hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible, even the ornaments of meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God at great price. See, there's something of more value about you. And even an unregenerate husband can recognize it. He ascertains it. He knows that you're not a blabbermouth and a chatterbox and screaming and hollering and, you know, on his back about everything. If your husband was not saved, how would you act? How would you behave when he came home? How would you behave when he doesn't do certain things that you know that are right to do, but he just doesn't do them? How would you act? That's a good question to ask, isn't it? Would you scream at him? Would you holler at him? Would you throw bottles at him? Would you pick up your shoe or frying pan and swing it at him? What would you do? I don't know. But it will tell something about who you are, because when you do that, you just lost your testimony. You've been examined and you've come up short. You've been appraised and your value's not very much. But when he comes in, he's slobbering, he's drunk, he's just comes in, drops on the floor, drunk, dead on the floor. You just pick him up and drag him into the bedroom and try to get him on a bed. I'll leave him down there and throw a blanket on him, throw a pillow on him, cover him up and say, see you in the morning if you wake up. Okay. You know, there's a difference in the way that you behave because it's the inner man. Otherwise, you can come in there and you can start saying, you're drunk again, I'm leaving, walk out, curse and holler. You know, there's no value to your faith. There's nothing in you whatsoever. I mean, you're being examined. And God allows us to go through some of these things that seem to be so tormenting that really bring out who we really are, the value of our faith. And that's what has to be ascertained for all of us. I mean, you look at yourself and you think, man, I'm not doing too well. Ephesians chapter 5, I mean, look at that when it comes to the man and how he treats his wife. I mean, because again, I mean, you married him, but maybe you were warned by some people. I don't know. Sometimes it just, it pays to listen. It might be painful, but the pain now is not as much as the pain later. I don't know how many times I've said that. But boy, the pain later, that's a lifetime of pain. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it that he might set it apart and cleanse it with the washing of the water of his word, to present himself a glorious church. Verse 28, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourished and cherished it, even as the Lord the church. So we're to love our wives as ourselves. We're to nourish her and cherish her. Those are big words there. But you look at that and you put the microscope on it and you get down and thinking, looking at your life and think, you're not much of a man. You think you're macho. You think I'll look at you. You're a cool daddy or whatever you want to call yourself. But in God's eyes, you're just as rotten and unworthy as you can be. You've been examined. And the sentence is coming in on your life. So you better do something about it and change it before it's too late. And that's what we're looking at here, examining our lives. And so, you know, when Jesus looked at Nathanael, he said, there is a man in whom there's no guile. The judgment took place upon that man's life because Jesus could see. He knew. And that's what's going on in our lives. And, I mean, he knows that whether we have the guile, the deceitfulness, the pride, the arrogance, the unloving, unkind. God, see, we're being examined. There are things that come back at us like a boomerang. And all they're doing is telling a story about our lives. But you examine yourself. Let's examine ourselves. Let's look at areas of the Christian life and see how well you pass the exam. Because if this is going on, maybe we ought to take a little closer look at ourselves, should we not? I think it would be advisable to do that, to look at ourselves. Well, being faithful. Number one, being faithful. Are you a faithful Christian? What does it mean to be faithful? It means that what you have learned and what you know to do right, you do it. You're faithful. You're faithful to your wife, faithful to your husband, faithful to your children. You're loyal. He that knoweth to do good and does not do it, to him it's sin. But we're talking about being faithful, being a doer of the word. You practice your faith on a daily basis, not a weekly basis. People say, well, I go to church every week. You know what? Church is every day in the sense that you spend time with God. You study and you read. You let God speak to you through his word. It's practical. And so live in such a way that people can see a difference about you. That's being faithful because you're being a doer of the word. I mean, Luke 16 and verse 10 speaks about faithful in the least little thing. So you give somebody a job that might seem to be not so much, but you're doing that to see how well they do it, to ascertain something about them. You're appraising them. How well? I want you to sweep the floor today. I remember when we worked for A&P, one of the things at the end of the day, they closed out every night. You had to wash the floor. First, the guy went through with a big mop, mopped everything. Another guy came through with a wash and washed the floor. Another guy came back and buffed it. And sometimes we were there and late, and we all jumped in to do it. I mean, we were being watched by the management, but this is what we were assigned to do at the end of the closing of the store, clean it up. And you just do it. Now, you can do it sloppily or you can do it effectively. I mean, you just go through it. You know, your life is being watched. You're being examined. And how they appraise you now might bring promotion later in your life because they see that you're doing a good job. In Luke 16, in verse 10, he says, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust in much." So if you won't do what is right in the little, you won't do what is right in the big. You're not deserving of promotion. And so that's why sometimes you start out as an apprentice in a smaller area and you work your way up. And so that's what we have to look at our lives. I mean, how ethical are we and how much do we work hard and put in our time and really show ourselves worthy of what we're doing? Or do we sit around and waste our time and are we lazy? Because there are people like that take advantage. Again, I mean, I'll stay on it because there are people in this world that will take advantage of anything whatsoever that is offered to them. They don't even see that they're being used. And they don't care. As long as they get their dime, they don't care. All they want is the money. But if we fail to live in a practical way what we know is right, then we become stumbling blocks ourselves. Stumbling blocks to other people who look at our lives. We go to church, we profess something, but then we live the opposite of what we profess or what they know we're supposed to do. Because a lot of people know what Christianity is supposed to be like to some degree. They know when some things are wrong. You hear people that have been involved in extortion of businesses and people who have raped and done all kinds of cruel and criminal things, and yet they went to the local Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist church or whatever. Well, they weren't a Christian. And so people watch you. They may not agree with you, but they know something about you. Even you young people, the way you dress and the way you carry yourself and the way you conduct your life and everything that you do. I mean, this is a lewd world today that is seductive as it can be, and dress can be a very seductive thing, and the way you dress and present yourself to other people is very important. Even if you can't afford the best, you still can look nice with the least you have. And that's something I think that really tells something about Christians. When you see people, again, walking around with these, I don't know why these women wear these tight jeans, and then some of them are too big for the jeans they put on. And it seems like the back is swelling up and popping out, if you know what I mean. And you wonder, do they see what's going on? Do they recognize it at all? Well, maybe God will have to open their eyes up. And so, again, if your life was under investigation, what would people find out about you? We know that our life is under an examination. At least I have come to that conclusion. God's watching. The devil's going about like a roaring lion. People see us. Family knows us. Everything is being exposed. It's coming forth. But what does it mean about us and the life that we're going through? So many Christians run around complaining, criticizing, gossiping, the negative testimony to the name of Christ. They're really not quiet and meek. They're not humble and kind and gracious and the things that the Bible speaks of as far as the fruit of the Spirit is concerned. I mean, they don't mind playing ball on Sunday. They don't mind missing church. They don't mind the things that are important seem to be not important to them. And that's part of who you are. Because when you tell somebody, no, not today, today's the Lord's Day, they might look at you as old-fashioned and religious and nuts, but I'd rather be looked at as old-fashioned, religious, and nuts than a compromiser. Let them think what they want because I know what is right. And that's what God requires of me. I mean, Jesus said this in John 5:36, "The very works I do bear witness of me." the very works I do bear witness of me. Do you know that what we do bears witness of us? It tells a testimony. Again, we are being examined. And so, look at your life. What about your speech? Our talk, communication, the words that come out of our mouth. I mean, all of the teasing, the joking, the jesting, frivolous talk, nasty talk, worldly talk, carnal talk. I mean, name it what you want. I mean, disrespectful, rude, unkind, uncaring, jealous, unloving. I mean, just a list of things. People so inconsiderate about the other people and murmuring about everything that goes on in life. I mean, how will people look at you? Whether they're your neighbors or co-workers or people in the church or the community, if that's all they see about you, they don't see something good. And your life is being exposed and laid out there naked and open unto whom we have to do. Your life's been examined, folks. People know who you are. They know more about you than you think they know. Like I've had a guy tell me locally here that I've known most of my life. He's seen when he passes by, he says he notices how many cars we got in the parking lot and how people are dressed. He's made comments about those things over the years. Just by driving by and looking, he notices these things. He said, look like those people dress real nice. Just an observation. He was just making a statement. But at least it's telling you something people see. They know what's going on. So when they ride by and they see you out there fighting or kissing or doing something you shouldn't be doing, what kind of testimony is that? And then they come to me and tell me something about that. Ooh. So again, how you talk, what you say is very important. How you treat your children in public. You know, your children need to be corrected, but sometimes wisdom tells you you don't do that in public. You just give them the eye. I call it give them the evil eye. They know what that means. You say, when you get home, boy, there's going to be pain on the bottom. They know. But follow through with what you say. But you don't holler and scream and get in a debate with your child in the grocery store. You don't let them get away with their whining and crying. I mean, if you do all those things, then it's just your testimony is going to pot. What about your attitude? Because more than anything else, it's our attitude when you examine it. How good of an attitude. You know, we're going to have our ups and downs in life. You'll be going along when everything is so good, so joyful, just so good. I mean, just so great. Then all of a sudden, something comes in and pops your bubble. Just a little thing comes in and pops your bubble, and all of a sudden you're suffering again, and you're, why'd this have to happen? Why'd he have to do that? Why'd she have to do that? Why? And you thought, you're being examined. You're going through something that's testing your value of your faith and the worth of who you call yourself. So how you're going to come out, I don't know. But some people can have, you know, just a self-righteous, better-than-you attitude. They look, sometimes people look at you and say, you think you're better than I am? I don't think I'm better than anybody else. I'm the least worthy of any. That's the way I look at it. But at the same time, Christ has made me worthy. I know that. The grace of God has come to me, and he's bestowed upon me a gift of righteousness. Now I have to work that out in my life, and I have to live accordingly. But there are two attitudes that are evident in your life more than any others. At least I think they are. It's honesty and humility. How honest you are and how humble you are, which brings it back to being teachable or correctable. See, humility is the opposite of pride. It's a person who doesn't esteem himself better than anybody else. I mean, he has a right estimation of who he really is. Because, I mean, this is from the lowest to the greatest. The uneducated to the educated. A man can be highly educated and yet be highly humble. Or he can be arrogant and proud and think he knows it all. Or he can be still teachable and learns, and he doesn't come off that way. It's about humility, because he sees, hey, I am who I am. I'm no better than anybody else. Because I've got a diploma in something doesn't make me smarter, better, or greater than anybody. And that's a man that has a right attitude about things. And so when you look at different individuals, it talks about picking out the deacons. They looked out for men that were honest among them. And Stephen was one of those men that was an honest man. He ended up preaching. He lost his life over preaching. You read through the book of Acts, that sermon he preached to those people, I mean, he was a chosen a deacon. He had to meet certain qualifications. But he spoke the truth in honesty to a stiff-necked, arrogant, hateful, religious, proud people who murdered him without any, I mean, cause whatsoever other than he pointed out the truth about their wicked lifestyle. Isn't that something? He was honest. He was honest as he could be, and he lost his life over it. And so you look at your life and you just evaluate. What about your dress? The way we dress. Again, it doesn't make any difference whether it's nice clothes or used clothes. It's just being neat. Being neat. You pull your britches up where they belong, and you tuck your shirt in. You button your shirt up. I don't personally, it's personal, I don't like people. I see people walking with their shirt tail out. I see people in the world sometimes in restaurants. They come in, they got a nice pair of slacks on, got a nice little sport coat on, and their shirt's untucked. And I'm thinking, why would you put a sport coat on over a shirt that's not even tucked in? Why are you being so sloppy? Who taught you that? What book did you look in and see that and like it? Because it's something to me that just doesn't give an image of something's not right. Because, I mean, if you're going to let the shirt be hanging out, don't even put the sport coat on because you're really putting a bad value on that sport coat by doing that. Sport coat, if you have it on, your shirt should be tucked in. You don't have to have a tie on, but the shirt should be tucked in. And your pants should fit. And you should look neat and clean. Nothing wrong with that, folks. I don't care whether you wear cowboy boots or combat boots. I don't care whether you wear dress shoes or undressed shoes. They can be clean. Except there'd be snow and mud outside. I understand that. So you look at all these things and you think, I mean, how you are being examined and what comes out in your life from all that you do. And it comes down to this whole thing that it's a character examination. It's all about your reputation and who you are. The Bible gives us contrasts about different kinds of people, the foolish and the wise, the responsible, the irresponsible, the good and the evil, the loud, the quiet, the proud and the humble, and the loving and the caring and the just and the unloving and the evil and the wicked. Contrast them all through the Bible. You see it. And it's all about character. It's an examination that takes place. We're called the living epistles. In the book of Acts, the early church backed their words with their life. Let me show you this and we'll conclude. In Acts chapter 4, in verse 1 and following, says, "And they spake unto the people, the priest and the captain of the temple and the Sadducees came upon them, being grieved that they taught the people and preached through Jesus the resurrection of the dead." They didn't like what they were preaching. And they laid their hands on them, put them in hold unto the next day, for it was now eventide. And then you read on down in verse 21, where it says, in verse 20, it says, "For we cannot," verse 19, "but Peter and John answered and said unto them," because they told them not to preach no more in the name of Jesus. And he says unto them, "Whether it be right in thy sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge you." You can examine that, but the conclusion you come up doesn't make a whole lot of difference. "For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard." Well, let's go back up into 4, verse 9. "If we this day be examined of the good deed done to this impotent man, by what means he is made whole, be it known unto you all and to the people of Israel that by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead, even by him does this man stand here before you." So he stands here because of a man who's dead but resurrected. He didn't stand here because of us. But they were examined. It says, "If this day we be examined," that's anakrino, scrutinized, looked at, questioned, inquired about, in order to pass some kind of judicial sentence. You can pass your sentence upon us. You've examined our lives, but this is where we stand. We're not going to be moved from this. So God will declare the excellence of our faith. You might look at it that we are got faults because you don't like what we're saying, but God looks at it and he approves of it, just like he did to three Hebrew children, because we're standing our ground about what we believe. And you see the same thing in Luke chapter 23 when Jesus stood before his judges of the day, Luke 23 and verse 13. where it says, "And Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, he said unto them, 'You have brought this man unto me as one that perverteth the people, and behold, I have examined him, Anacrino. I have scrutinized him, I've investigated him, I've sifted through questioning, I have come to a declaration, I have come to a judicial sentence.'" And he said unto them, verse 14, "You have brought this man before me as one that perverteth. I have examined him before you, have found no fault in this man touching those things whereof you accuse him." No fault. Isn't that what we're supposed to be as God looks at us? Isn't he going to present us faultless before the presence of his glory? He's examining us right now, and that's the conclusion that God wants to come out in our lives. An examined people, an examined life, when you look at it, has been dealt with. Oh, they've been through the grinder. They've been through the fiery trials. They've been through the chastisement. They've been through the hardships, the difficulties. They've been through it, but they stuck with it. They didn't give up. They didn't quit. They held on and let God make them and mold them into the image of Christ, because that's God's ultimate goal in all of our lives. That's an examined life. It's like in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 3 when it speaks about Daniel when he was chosen, because it says he had an excellent spirit. An excellent spirit. And he did. He had a good spirit about him. Where is that today in the life of so many people who profess to be Christians? So it all comes down to character, doesn't it? All comes down to who we really are, what's emerging in our lives as we're being examined before all that's going on that God is allowing. Whether it's the devil, whether it's the community, your family, your neighbors, ever who it is, there's an investigation. And what you're going to be like at the end. Job came out good at the end. He went through whatever you want. He went down as low as a man can go. Lost everything. And he came out at the end and he saw the light. I've heard you with my ears, but now I see you with my eyes. Something changed in Job. Something drastically changed. It turned his whole attitude and life around, and everything came back to Job. An examined life. And if anybody was ever examined in this whole world, it was Job. And we are going through similar things. We're being examined. How well are you doing? How well do you examine yourself, like 1 Corinthians 11 says, or 2 Corinthians, to see if you be in the faith? Being fair and just and honest with yourself, not excusing anything, being hard on yourself. You do that and you'll come out good, and God will not have to judge you, for you have judged yourself. You made the examination and you look at it and you say, "Lord, I see this weakness, I see this fault, and I need help." And God will get you through it all. That's what the examined life is about, folks, that we come out to the end of this thing, they find us clean, without fault. Like David said in Psalms 26, "Judge me. I have not sat with these vain men and been around all of these wrong. The best of my knowledge, you judge this. Seek my heart, and my attitude and my life is right." You bow your hearts with me. Father, in the name of Jesus, we thank you that you're doing a good work in our lives, a deep examination, bringing to surface the scum and those weaknesses in our lives, to the end that we might, at the end, be found faultless before the presence of your glory. And for that, we are eternally grateful. And we thank you in Jesus' name.